Sunday, April 18th, 1948, will be a day of decision in Italy. It will be a day of decision for the whole world. For on that day, the people of Italy will determine their political future. It may well be that upon their decision hinges the question of war or peace. In order that our listeners may better understand the factors which will determine this momentous decision in Italy, we bring you now the first in a series of three transcribed talks by Dr. Willis Dunbar, Educational Director of the Fetzer Broadcasting Company. Dr. Dunbar.
The election in Italy, 2 weeks from today, will be held for the purpose of choosing members of the Chamber of Deputies. Under the parliamentary system, the outcome of the election also will determine the makeup of the cabinet, which constitutes the executive branch of the government. Whatever party or group of parties wins a majority of the Chamber of Deputies seats will be able to control the makeup of the cabinet. There are a total of 574 seats in the Chamber of Deputies to be filled. These are divided up amongst 31 electoral districts. That's an average of about 18 from each electoral district. But of course, the electoral districts vary in size according to their population. The largest one is the city of Rome, which has been assigned 37 seats. Several of the districts will choose less than the average of 18. It is of the utmost importance in understanding the Italian elections to consider carefully the manner in which the successful candidates in these 31 districts are selected. Now, Italy has what is called proportional representation, and this fact may have a great deal to do with the outcome of the election. Let's see how this system works and how it contrasts with our system of electing members of our National House of Representatives. In this country, we divide a state up into congressional districts. Each district elects one member of the House of Representatives. The candidate receiving the largest number of votes is thereby elected. Now, the advocates of proportional representation argue that this system is not entirely democratic. For instance, Michigan has a total of 17 members in the National House of Representatives. Only three out of these 17 are Democrats. That's about 18%. The others are Republicans. Yet if you add up all the votes cast in the 1946 elections for Michigan congressmen, you will find that about 36% of them were Democratic. The reason for this discrepancy is that every Democratic vote was virtually thrown away in those 14 districts electing Republicans. If we had proportional representation, instead of having three Democrats in the House, Michigan would have six. To take another case, six out of nine Kentucky congressmen are Democrats. Yet in 1946, the Republican vote in Kentucky was actually larger than the Democratic vote. You see, the vote was probably close in the districts electing Democrats, whereas the Republicans won in their districts by large majorities. Now, under proportional representation plan, each political party would be assigned that number of seats to which it is entitled on the basis of the proportion of votes it receives in a large election district. Each party, in other words, is represented according to its proportional strength. That's the case for proportional representation. Well, now let's see how this system of proportional representation actually operates in Italy. Let us imagine an electoral district in which 10 members of the Chamber of Deputies will be chosen. That's rather smaller than the average, which, as we have noted, is 18. But it will be easier to grasp the method if we arbitrarily suppose that only 10 deputies are to be chosen from this particular district. In Italy, there are not just two major parties, as we have in the United States. There are a great many. We'll say something more about that later on. Let's say in our imaginary electoral district that there are 10 political parties. Now, each of these 10 parties registers a list of 10 candidates, enough to fill all the seats assigned to the district. There are, in all, 10 parties then, and in those 10 parties, 10 candidates each, a grand total of 100 candidates. On Sunday, April 18th, the voter goes to the polls. He votes for the party of his choice. He doesn't vote for any particular candidate. He just votes for his party. Now, when the polls are closed, the votes are counted. Let us suppose that a total of 400,000 votes are cast in that particular district. 10 candidates are to be chosen. This means that 40,000 votes are required to elect. If through some magic each of the 10 parties received exactly 40,000 votes, then each one would send the first person on its list to the Chamber of Deputies. But the parties vary greatly in strength. And of course, in actual practice, a party would never receive just exactly 40 or 80,000 votes, except by a miracle, but rather 53,456 or 78,311 or some other odd figure. Now, the manner in which these balances would be handled under the Italian system is terribly complicated. I'm not sure I understand it perfectly myself, so it would be rather silly for me to try to explain it to anyone else. But I can tell you a few things about it, and they are very important. Going back again to our hypothetical case in which 40,000 votes are required in a district to elect, a party which receives 53,000 or even 79,999 only elects one candidate. The number of votes over and above 40,000 are transferred. The way in which this is done is very confusing, but the all-important point is this. These fractions redound to the benefit of the larger parties. Bear that in mind as we continue. Let's leave our hypothetical case now and return to the actual figures in the Italian election of 2 weeks from today. In the country's 31 electoral districts, there will be a grand total of 359 lists of candidates. This means, on the average, something like 12 parties are contesting in the average district. In Rome, 22 parties have filed lists of candidates. Think of it, 22 parties. Each one has 37 names on its list, or a grand total of 814 candidates, from which Rome will choose 37 delegates to the Chamber of Deputies. Taking Italy as a whole, a total of 6,500 candidates will run for those 574 seats. What does this mean so far as the election results are concerned? Well, it means that the anti-communist parties in Italy are hopelessly split up, whereas the communists stand together. In Rome, for example, 21 out of the 22 parties are anti-communist. Now, for the reason I mentioned a moment ago, that is, the manner in which the fractional votes are disposed of, this gives the communists a very marked advantage. It is estimated by experts that this fragmentation of anti-communist parties and the consequent gain which the communists will make because of the disposition of the fractional votes, they will get 20 or 25 more seats than they actually deserve. Thus, the mechanism of proportional representation, as it works out in Italy, favors the communists because they constitute the largest single party. The last election in Italy was held in June 1946. At that time, there were 312 lists of candidates as compared to 359 this time. There were 4,760 candidates then as compared to 6,500 now. The makeup of the chamber as it was chosen at that time gave the Christian Democrats 207 seats, the Socialists 115, and the Communists 104. Alcide De Gasperi, the premier, is a member of the Christian Democratic Party. Minor parties represented in the present Chamber of Deputies are National Democratic Union, 41 seats, the Common Man Party, 40 seats, Republicans, 23 seats, National Bloc of Freedom, 16, and Action Party, 7. Now, it is estimated that the communists 2 weeks from today may get as many as 30 or 40% of the popular vote. If they get less than 30%, they will definitely have taken a licking. If they get more than 40%, they will have won a definite victory. If they were to win a clear majority of the seats in the Chamber of Deputies, they would automatically take over the cabinet, unless, of course, they were forcibly prevented from the outside from doing so. If they should win between 40 and 50%, they will certainly have a very strong claim on at least some of the cabinet posts. If the communists ever take over the Ministry of the Interior or the Army or both, then the same procedure is very likely to be followed as was in Czechoslovakia. Now, the question of whether the communists can be excluded from the cabinet altogether, providing they don't get more than, say, 35 or 40% of the vote, will depend very largely on the extent to which the other parties are able to stand together and work together as a unit. If the communists have 35% and all the anti-communist parties were to join hands, then the latter would have 65%. Which is, of course, a clear controlling majority. But it is very distressing to note that the pre-election developments do not show any disposition among the anti-communist parties to coalesce. As I pointed out a moment ago, there are actually more parties this time than there were 2 years ago. Instead of combining, the anti-communist parties actually have further split up. Whether they will be able to join hands against the communists after the election is anyone's guess. Here again is a reflection of the difference which a multi-party system as compared to our two-party system makes. Many an American president has been elected by 65% of the vote or much less. Yet he chooses for his cabinet only men who are members of his own party. The only exception is in time of war, when party rivalry is largely suspended. Otherwise, a president chooses all Republicans for his cabinet if he is a Republican, or all Democrats if he's a Democrat, even though he may have been elected by only 51% of the vote. The continental European democracies, however, do not do this. One reason is that where you have so many parties, no one ever gets a majority. Hence, a premier in France or in Italy may have members of half a dozen different political parties in his cabinet. The communists, therefore, are going to argue, if they get anything like the vote they anticipate, that they should have certain cabinet posts, even though they may not get the premiership. We know from experience, however, that once a communist gets into a position of power, he systematically sabotages the government he pretends to serve. It's a grave mistake to treat the Communist Party just as you would treat any other party. What the communist wants is a change in the system. He is determined either to rule or to ruin. In the election 2 years ago, more than 22 million Italians cast a ballot. Italy has a population of about 46 million. So approximately 50% of the population voted, and that's a pretty high percentage. In the 1944 presidential election in this country, there were around 48 million votes cast out of a population of close to 140 million, which is only 35%. A determined effort is being made to get out the rural vote in Italy this time. The anti-communist parties are expected to make their best showing in the predominantly agricultural south, whereas the communists are expected to get their largest vote in the industrial north. So much for the mechanism of the election. But what will determine the decision which Italy makes? What are the forces at work in Italy, the background of this decision? We will discuss that next Sunday.
You have been listening to the first in a series of three transcribed talks on the background of the Italian election by Dr. Willis Dunbar, Educational Director of the Fetzer Broadcasting Company. We invite you to tune in again next Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock for the second in this series on Decision in Italy. And now the Italian National March. This has been another of the many programs presented in the public interest by the Fetzer Broadcasting Company.